Hello, welcome to Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Cabin in the Woods.
The cult classic from Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon, from some of my favorite people out there in horror land.
And in Hollywood land, and yes, in general.
And land. So Olga's back, she's less sick, I'm more sick, so.
Yeah, I did not get Dan sick, I promise. I have not seen him since the last time we recorded the podcast.
Our relationship is falling to pieces, guys.
Thanks to rhinovirus.
Anyway, so, Cabin in the Woods, it's a show, it's a movie that I have seen many a time. I'm a really big fan. So this is back to the classic Screamcast, where I've seen a movie 5,000 times and Olga's seeing it for the first time. Yeah, so I really like this movie. This is one of the, this is up there for with Scream for me, where it's, you know, just really bending the genre and the tropes in a lot of ways. What did you think of it?
Definitely agree.
Yeah.
I had a lot of, when I first saw the trailers for this, back in the olden days of 2012, I was like, this looks awful. Why would I see this? Why would Chris Hemsworth agree to this? He's Thor, for crying out loud. I've refused to acknowledge this movie until Dan. Like, what?
Well, but I thought you had heard things on podcasts and stuff since then.
Hinted to me that it was more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Much like a Transformer. Damn it, Dan! Stepped on my joke.
Much like a Transformer, yes.
And then, you know, you more directly told me, like, no, it's Joss Whedon. It's very different from what it tries to be. All of that.
Yeah.
Like,
and they had a struggle with marketing this film. You know, I don't blame them because they didn't want to give stuff away. But the problem with that is that if you don't give things away, then all you have is this cliche horror film, which is not what the point of it is. Mm-hmm. And I remember, so I saw it, like, right when it came out, and I believe I saw it, A, because I knew Joss wrote it, and B, because I saw, like, very positive reviews about it, and I was like, okay, it has to be more than just what it appears to be, and then I heard that there was a big twist, but not, I didn't know anything beyond that.
Right.
So, you know, I saw it kind of in the perfect environment. It was opening weekend, nobody else knew the twist either. Mm-hmm. I was with a great audience of people laughing at all the jokes, and it was, you know, really surprising and exciting, and it was that kind of, it felt like how I would think that seeing Scream when it first came out probably felt to people, where it, you know, it's maybe a little bit less as extreme as that, because that, it was, like, really fresh when Scream came out, but even this felt, I was like, oh, they finally found a way to do it again, though it still feels as fresh to me as Scream would, you know, because it's, the meta thing had become such a been there, done that, especially when you have four Scream movies or whatever at this point.
Commenting and recommenting. Yeah.
And so, just the brilliance of, we're going to do meta in a different way, and we're going to, you know, we have all these tropes, and we're going to give a reason why they exist in-world, as opposed to even, not just comment on the tropes, but we're going to make the tropes the plot.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. They became tropes because of this reality, this version of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to kind of just for a second, how I knew it would also be more than meets the eye, it's just slowly things and images started peeking out where I was like, there is some sort of lab rat environment aspect to this movie.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I was still expecting torture porn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the last thing that I want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
And anything that touched anywhere close to that in the movie still twisted me the wrong way, like, twisted my stomach a little bit. But not at the fault, I will say, not the movie's fault, because it really wasn't bad. Like you said, while we were just talking about it for a few minutes between starting recording and finishing the movie, they cut out a lot of, they don't show us a lot of the actual violence.
Yeah. Well, so I was sort of debating with you about how much is this even a horror movie? Like, obviously it has the trappings of a horror movie, and there are violent or scary elements for sure, right?
Yeah, it relies on jump scares a lot.
Well, I don't even know if I'd agree. I mean, I think there's a couple, but my point is, like, I don't even know that I would say the predominant genre is horror, because I don't think that this movie is designed to scare you, even more so than something like Scream or, you know, even Scream 4 and stuff, where I feel like an issue that I had with Scream 4 is that I feel like it's still trying to be a horror movie, but not really succeeding.
It can't be, yeah, at this point.
This is just like, there are horror elements, but like, they purposely undercut a lot of them by cutting back to the people walking them. Like, yeah, that doesn't build tension.
No, it undermines
and
it.
And there's much more about the commentary and the plot and the comedy than it is about, we're going to scare you here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's about fun.
I'm inclined to agree, having now seen the full movie.
Yeah.
Going into, maybe we were like partway or most of the way through the second act.
Yeah.
But not in the third act yet.
We're in Bucknerland.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere towards the end of Bucknerland. At that point, I turned to you and was like, no, I disagree. This is a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I do come in with less experience of horror movies. And most of my experience now with horror movies is with the meta stuff. The stuff that is so, quote, derivative. Not derivative, well, but inspired, coming later and inspired by where the horror landscape has been for all those decades leading up. So, you know, and that commentary and that skewed point of view that I've been given, that makes my perspective of horror movies different than someone who's like, I will start at the, or I will consume everything from
the classics,
70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s in equal parts and see where the beginning and middle and end of this genre are.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I think, and the modern, the sort of winking at it, you know, we're going to talk about it rather than be it, is the stuff that I obviously like the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that I definitely look at the meta stuff even more than I look at the meat of it. But I think that's the thing, is that it is purposely distancing you from the tropes and the cliches to talk about them in a very specific way. You know, we even have the moments like the nudity and stuff like that, where we're going, you know, I think that it's interesting how this movie, in a lot of ways, has its cake and eats it too, which usually doesn't work, but I feel like it kind of does here.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we have the nudity scene, and they're showing you, you know, they're cutting to like an audience member being like, oh yeah, show us the nudity, we want nudity for a king, you know, like,
yeah,
and they're both sort of winking at it, making you think about yourself, but then also giving you, as a, you know, assuming you're a male horror fan viewer, stereotypical horror fan viewer, they're still getting that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're making you think about it a little bit more, and in world they're giving you a reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the reasoning behind everything. It satisfies my highly analytical mind.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, so one thing I do want to talk to you about is, I had a film professor who really likes Scream, but doesn't really like this movie. And that always seemed odd to me. And his main reasoning is that he feels like the characters are, like, you can't connect with anyone here. And I think to a certain degree, I can understand why, like, for the majority of the thing, they're purposely stereotyped, you know, they're purposely archetypes.
Yeah. They're forced into their archetype.
Yeah, they're forced
position.
Into archetypes, so therefore, how do you connect with them if they're being made to be archetypes?
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of think that's interesting, because I do think this movie, more than almost any that I can think of off the top of my head, is so much about plot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the plot is so good. So from my perspective, I'm like, the plot's so good, and that the type of movie that it is, I don't care. Like, you know, yes, it would be nice to have, but that's, like, it's not about character. And, like, usually I think that's important, but it's, when you have a plot that's this good, and you have actors who, even if the characters are thin, they're still charismatic, and it's still fun, like, it doesn't really bother me.
So here's the thing, my question, I should say. Is your professor saying the characters are thin, or the characters are unrelatable?
I think he's saying the characters are thin. That there's nothing to grasp onto to, like, be like, I don't want them to die, I want them to have this R. You know, there's nothing. So it's not about relatability as much as it's connection.
Okay.
You know.
So what I would say is, there is really good character work.
Yeah.
The beginning sets up the characters onto the terms in which they are supposed to be.
Yeah.
But it does that from the get-go.
Yeah.
It does it so well and so efficiently. Like, that opening scene...
And Dana's partner.
Dana's opening scene, as opposed to the opening scene of... Who are they? Sitterson.
In the actual lab.
Yeah, in the lab. Sitterson and Hadley, played by Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins, who are, even if you don't know those names, you have seen them.
Yeah.
Like, you know those actors.
This film in general is filled with, like, oh, I vaguely remember who is this person.
Right. And if, I mean, you better know Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
You better fucking know Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I will judge you if you do not know Sigourney Weaver.
I know Sigourney Weaver.
I'm talking to the listener.
But you're pointing at me.
Yes, but I'm looking at the mic, which is also where you are. Anyway, so the scene that introduces us to our group of five is really, really effective.
Yeah.
Like, you know the terms that we are playing by, and then it even convolutes that a little bit of, like, they are more themselves thanks to the chemistry department and all these other interfering factors.
Well, they're less of themselves, you mean?
They're more of these archetypes and less of the character.
Yeah, yeah.
But even so, we see hints of the character ahead of time.
Yeah.
And also the thing that subverts this archetype, and then they become the archetype. So
the thing that is complicated about it is that they are already, even in that opening scene, they're already influencing them. She already has the hair dye.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, we never fully see, we get hints of that. Like, we get hints from the very beginning that Dana isn't this virginal character, you know, like, and we get hints of, you know, Kurt being, you know, being a sociology major, we get Holden catching the football, you know.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that they have these nice subversions, and everyone has, you know, nice quips. They have just charisma and likability, and so yes, even though I do think they're thin and it's not necessarily like there's a, especially if you look at the ending isn't a movie, this isn't a movie caring about what happens to the people in
the entire point is that it's not in a lot of ways. So I agree with you 100% that for once plot and paying attention to the plot, and if anything, all those quippy lines and jokes, those are very important to not just building characterization.
Yeah.
They're there to inform the viewer, and you better pay attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, talking over parts of this movie is dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
You miss important stuff. Like, it was nice being able to pause, rewind, watch it again.
Yeah.
I'm impressed, I have to say. I'm really impressed.
It's just one of those movies where the plot, I was just like, like, you know, I guess, like, mind blown. Like, how did I not think
hashtag
of this?
Hashtag mind blown.
I was just like, you know, it's just so inventive and imaginative and fun, you know?
Yeah.
And especially, like, I love all the little things, like having all the other countries have their own rituals. And this is why, like, Japan has these kinds of horror movies, because it comes from the actual ritual.
Yeah.
And having the, I mean, I...
their own horrors and monsters and folklore, so to speak.
And the mixture, I mean, like, it's a classic thing, but, like, the mixture of these old gods, these horror elements, and this clinical machine, chemical driven environment. It's just a fun mixture of genre ideas.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And you do root for Dana and Marty.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah. I think
it's nice.
I think Marty's great. I think Fran Kranz does a really good job. And yes, he's like a thin character, but he's a funny as fuck character. And you know,
and interesting and smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not often is the stoner the smart guy.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, I do like how they play with the fact that yes, he is saying stoner like philosophical bullshit, but he also, within that bullshit, he is the one who's getting things that everybody else isn't.
Yeah.
He is the one who's seeing past that stuff. And I do think that's fun. And, of course, we have, like, the fun imagery with him with the bong and everything. Mm-hmm. And I love how that comes back when he reappears.
Yeah, it's his weapon.
Yeah,
his
that's so great. Weapon. And, I mean, I guess remember, like, I love that whole party scene where we see Dana in the background.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on with her? But there's all these funny jokes going around.
Oh, she must
around.
Be getting killed because whatever. And then... No.
Yeah. And then the red phone, it just flows so nicely, and I know I've seen this movie a ton of times, but it's still really fun each time.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about a few of the major moments. There was the whole moment with the painting and then the two-way mirror, which I do think was also another, in addition to the opening scene, a good moment for setting up the characters, because they did make Holden
somewhat
of a stand-up guy, and yes. Then same thing with her, where she like she looks a little bit, but then, and I like how they both have that.
Yeah.
And I do like, you know, I was talking about the commentary and stuff, that they have her being, you know, not a full virgin, so we have our final girl, but
we take what we can get.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was really funny. Yeah, which makes sense. You can't always find a group of five people who perfectly, they make them fit into their roles, as opposed to finding, like, exactly that group.
Hence making her a stupider, sexualized, dumb blonde. Who was it? What's her name? Jules.
Yeah.
And making Kurt more of the alpha male. Even though he's a sociology major. Like, all of that. Make them fit their roles so that then once they're stupider people making stupider decisions, and that will lead to their demise.
They're trespassing and then their demise. So, I mean, I do love how they have stuff like the hair dye. They even throw out, oh, Marty was able to get over our chemicals because his he had a special stash.
Yeah. Some
pot saves lives, kids. and then so I like the things with the pheromone mists and the the sun, the moonlight coming through. Yeah,
the environment of it was
There are some things where it is a little bit of a stretch, where it's like, how do they literally get him to say, oh, maybe we should split up, guys. Like,
yeah, that was a little weird.
It's a bit much, but, you know.
I have to say, so many of my favorite moments are what take place underground in the office level.
With the, so I thought you were going to say, when Dana get down there, but you just mean in general.
In general?
Yeah.
But I actually think that the last act, once they are firmly underground, where it's the mishmash of monsters and your eye doesn't know where to go, what to look at. It's mayhem. It's horror.
Yeah.
On steroids.
Yeah. The fucking unicorn.
Man. There's a... I've definitely seen that gif.
Yeah. I love the unicorn.
Definitely seen that. And I've never known what it was from.
And of course, the merman is this classic.
Oh, like, God. That's a classic merman for sure.
No, I mean, the joke. Okay. The buildup of, hey, he wants to see the merman.
Yeah,
he wants
it's his demise.
Yeah, and then the spurting of the blood. Like, oh, that was just so great.
It just ties together so well. How was this written in 3 days?
I know.
Like, how? How?
Oh, it's so fun.
I'm not saying it wasn't revised, here and there to add jokes or take away worse things, but still, if the chunks... If the bare bones of this were even there.
Yeah, no. I mean, it feels like one of those ideas where it just kind of comes to you all at once, you know? And you're either that person or you're not.
You'd either... you know that better than I. Dance the creative here.
But no, it's so much fun. I love Mordecai is the best.
I don't love him as much as you do.
Oh, I fucking love
Except
Mordecai.
Except the scene, again, underground when he's calling. Well, no,
that's why I love Mordecai. Oh, okay. They're coming to the killing floor. Like, you're on speakerphone. It's so good.
Oh, man.
Oh, my favorite part, though, is when he's on speakerphone, he gets upset about it, and then he's like, okay, I'm not on speakerphone, and then he just goes right back into it.
It's like, he's this character, but he's more than this character. Or less, you know.
He's like, they found someone who's a little too good at the job.
Yeah, you know, like. Well, what you said when we first, you know, met Mordecai, I was like, oh, I love this. And we're watching it, and I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I can see how this is making you more convinced that this is a tropic horror movie, and we'll probably subvert this later.
Yeah.
But even with the character, when they subvert it, man, they go hard. Like, he is the joke of the entire department.
Yeah.
Or the,
Which is, I'm trying to remember, I feel like there was something that we watched for this show that I remember tweeting about it and being like, this is them trying to do Mordecai, like, but not knowing that it's a joke. I forget what it was, whether it was something in Scream or Scream Queens. It must have been in Scream, I assume, but I'm totally blanking.
The TV series?
Yeah, where there was a Harbinger. How can I not remember now? Well, I'll try to think it over, but it was definitely, I definitely remember live tweeting and being like, my God.
Go control F to our Twitter feed.
Yeah. And I was just like, you can't, like, especially after I've seen that, like, you can't do that literally to me anymore without me totally rolling my eyes.
Yeah, you know? So it makes me wonder if, like, those scary movie parody things.
I remembered. It was Dead of Summer. There was a thing in Dead of Summer where there was a Harbinger of Doom.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember anything in Scream, but this makes me wonder if when this movie came out, if Scary Movie tried to incorporate Cabin in the Woods in its...
Scary Movie?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, well, there was only probably five came out after this. You're just saying the idea of them incorporating it?
The idea of one of the things that they're commenting on, because, like, Scary Movie does shitty parodies horror movies that come out so they, in between.
You think the idea would be funny?
No. I'm wondering if they try, but you can't do that with this movie because it does that better than anything else.
Yeah.
But still maintains, like, the horror, the violence, the tropes, and the anti-tropes.
They blend it very nicely. Yeah. Let's talk more about the commentary stuff. I do think that I love the moment with them walking the final girl and the whole idea of, he doesn't have to live or die. He just has to be last.
Yeah, him. I loved that.
Yeah.
She has to suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
And him being like, you know, I root for her. I don't really even know why, but, you know, you guess he's been through so much. And he's, like, going into, like, he, like, starts the monologue of, like, why final girls are so important. And then, tequila is my lady.
And just interrupts himself. Even the camera, like, it kind of zooms in on him, pans in, zooms in. Yeah. I don't know the difference of these terms. It goes in on him. The sympathetic background score is, like, kind of playing a little bit.
Panning is side to side, zooming, so it would be zoom or dolly, because you would dolly in with a dolly going forward backward, dollying out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whatever technique they use, they do that to Bradley Whitford, and then immediately, hey, tequila is my lady.
And I love all the little side characters. We have the intern who's from Buffy. Really funny.
Who isn't from Buffy? Why don't you list the people
who isn't from Buffy? Well, that's the only one who's from Buffy. What's her name? Amy Acker is from Angel.
Oh, okay.
And then we have Fran Kranz from Dollhouse. So all of Newton's favorites.
And probably half of these people have appeared in
other things since.
In other things, and specifically Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
Also made in a weekend with Joss Whedon. Yeah. He loves to maximize his weekends. Well, let's just be honest.
Let's hope he has a good weekend sometime soon. It's been too long.
Bingo. Man.
Yeah.
I just this is going to stay with me in a really pleasant way.
Yeah. No, it's a really fun movie. Getting back to a little bit more, I really do like how meta they were without really throwing it in your face, just because they were talking with the audience, but the audience was a thing in the world. You know, there was the multiple layers of, like, the people at the office were an audience member, but also they were talking about the audience because we have the gods.
Yeah.
And
the director.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. So I liked how they were like, we have to do this for the audience, and, you know, how they would break the wall that way and deconstruct what the audience wants. And, you know, again, sort of throw it back on you where, yes, you're laughing at it, but you're also thinking about yourself a little bit.
All right, so skipping to the very end.
Yeah.
Regarding what the audience wants.
Yeah, they want to destroy the world.
No, that's not what the audience wants.
Yeah.
That is what in-universe they want, but isn't that what we would also kind of want out of a horror movie? Wouldn't we want Dana to shoot Marty?
Yeah. The ending is interesting because it isn't really a satisfying ending. But it kind of doesn't matter at that point because everything's been so fun up to now where you're like, do we really want this movie to have a classic ending?
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like, it's a weird ending though because you do like these characters and they are good people, but they're also just like, fuck it, we'll let the world blow up.
Yeah, we'll let the world end because humanity sucks. Let's give things a fresh start. Yeah.
Which, I mean, they slightly build up earlier, but it is just kind of, okay, this is a little bit weird. Oh, whatever, it's a giant hand, we're okay with it.
Right, but here's the kind of other irony that I haven't thought about until just now, is all the other similar sacrifice projects that have happened across the world in this year, all they need is one successful one.
Yeah.
Right? But in this year, all of them fail.
Yeah.
So if anything, hasn't humanity now gotten to the point where they are really good at protecting themselves and really good at thinking on their feet and being smart and deserving to stay alive?
Yeah.
Because of using their wits and capabilities?
Yeah.
In the year that they are capable of doing that, where 9-year-old Japanese girls can defeat a spirit?
Yeah.
that's the year that humanity gets destroyed.
That's an interesting point, because as you were building up, I was thinking of a totally different thing.
What?
Because I was thinking of something, so that makes sense what you're saying as far as in the world of the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
But you were making me think, it's like, oh, what is this saying about horror in general? That all of them fail because we understand all of the tropes and are able to overcome them.
Yeah.
And everything, you can't scare us anymore, it's gonna fail because it's all been done before, and now all we can do is make fun of it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really interesting. And I mean, I feel like they do that in multiple ways where they really, because they have, like, a ridiculous-looking wolf man. They have, like, most of those creatures are not that scary. Like, if anything, the Buckners are probably the most scary.
Fucking, you know? Hillbillies. Yeah.
Like, everything, that's the thing, like, the movie wouldn't have worked if they had picked almost anything else. Because
the unicorn.
The unicorn was hilarious, but yeah, like even that, like, dragon bat thing, which I do think is probably one of the best, like, realized looking creatures that they have, because honestly, their budget was not that high. A lot of the special effects were not that amazing when they were throwing, I mean, but it was like there was so much that you didn't care.
Yeah. The fight, not even the fight scene, the massacre scenes, it's like, this isn't good CGI, but
it's like, whatever.
It's funny and ridiculous enough to cover that.
Yeah. So it's like, the Buckners are the ones that were really frightening. Everything else was just kind of gravy. So did you like the ending? Did you feel like it was unsatisfying, or?
I think that's what the movie needed, though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you make an ending
for that film.
For that, yeah. I mean, it's kind of true. Like, I would say in a lot of ways, this is heavily similar to sketch comedy, where this movie is, while it has a very important overarching story and plot is very important, in a lot of ways, it's a series of skits.
Yeah.
If you think about the distinct moments, they are distinct skits.
Yeah.
And like much sketch comedy, it's the hardest thing to do is end a sketch.
Yeah. And all you can really do is you have to have a good joke and just get out.
Yeah. It's just you make your jokes, you make them, you pay it off as best you can, and get out.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie had to do.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it fulfilled its...
I think, honestly, the only thing that I feel like might have been a better choice is still have it end with the giant hand, right?
Right.
But I don't know if coming back to that quiet moment of them sitting and talking about it was the right move. I think that there's something in, like, funny about it, where there's like talking, whatever, we're gonna commiserate over what all that's happened
before the world. Sorry, I was gonna shoot you.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have.
I definitely think there's funny lines there, but I also think that when you slow it down, it does bring you back to, oh, these are characters and they're making a weird decision here.
Yeah.
You know, and as opposed to just, like, higher, huge joke out. You know, so I don't know if that would have maybe, you know. Well, I feel like when your characters are second fiddle, you might want to just go full in.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what would have been the better choice. But at the same time, it was kind of nice having the two final survivors ultimately just chill there and talk and light up a joint and die, you know?
Stoners will survive, but they will also end the world.
Yeah, basically. It was interesting. It was weird. Sigourney Weaver got axed in the head. I don't know. I have to say, after the movie ended, we went on IMDb just to look through, because I couldn't remember a few people's names of the actors, and it was bothering me. But Dan wouldn't let me look at IMDb, rightfully so, because I would have been spoiled on several things.
Yeah.
But once you've seen this movie, go on IMDb and look at their trivia section.
Yeah, say at least the Fran Kranz thing, because I thought that was funny.
Oh, that was interesting. Yeah. So there's Fran Kranz in the lakeside scene. He's the only one not wearing a bathing suit. He's still wearing his baggy clothes covered up. And that's because they decided that he was in too good shape for that character. Like, he wasn't, you know, super buff, but yeah. they called him Buff Jesus because he's like lean, but also muscular. And that's not what this character is. Like, they don't want the character to look capable of
physically fighting someone off. Yeah, this character is not the character that goes to the gym every single day, you know, and Frank Kranz is.
Or even go run 5 miles and have a runner's body. Like, no, that's not who this character is. This is supposed to be a stoner.
Yeah. I do want to throw in the fact that reminded me that the fact that they did put that little thing of Jules had made out with him once.
Yeah.
I think that was a nice little move of also showing who Jules was before the hair dye.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that, like, she just did that because she was, you know, quote unquote, the whore or whatever. Mm-hmm. It seems like they actually had a connection at one point.
Yeah.
And which, you know, the fact that character would in any way have a connection with Frank Kranz's character.
Who's like a philosophical, like, stoner guy,
little pipsqueak compared to Kurt, you know, So I think there are little nuggets of things here that I think were fun.
So good. And so layered.
That also reminded me, the other thing that I really like is the whole thing with when Kurt comes in then the opening scene and he sees Jules with the books.
Yeah.
And he's like, what are you doing with these?
I learned it from you.
And that's an especially funny scene if you know the whole Final Girl trope, because especially in early ones, Final Girls would always be like the bookish ones, and everybody would make fun of them for liking learning.
Yeah.
And things like that. And so that was very
clearly. But then Jock was saying, like, no, the professor covers this one. Read this one. And you're like, wait, what the fuck? what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
Okay. I can reconcile with this.
Yeah. That's and then, of course, ending it with, and you don't have pants on.
That was much like this podcast. So, on that note,
let us know what you guys think of this movie. We would love to have more feedback on movie ones, guys. I know you listen to them. What did you think of Hush? Come on, let us know.
What do you want to hear? What do you want us to podcast on?
Yeah. Oh, I hope you enjoy this little mini-sode. We haven't had a Scream Queens in a while, and we're kind of holding off on American Horror Story until the finale.
Dan's now 2 episodes behind.
I know, I need to catch up.
I don't enjoy watching it alone.
Hey, you decided to watch the first one.
I was sick.
Yeah.
I had nothing else
to
do.
Well, now I'm sick, so I don't want to watch it. Because it sickens me to begin with.
Kind of, though.
All right, guys. There's a reason. Please follow us on Twitter @ScreamPod. Email us at thescreamcast@gmail.com. And thank you guys so much for listening. Scream you later.
Scream you later.